You've reached Hotline Design Podcast. How may we help you? Welcome back to Hotline Design Podcast. In this week's episode, we're keeping the user testing theme going by talking all about another exciting approach, unmoderated user testing. What is it? Our experiences and unpacking more about the introverted researcher's favorite form of user testing. So ladies, I have to know, how have your weeks been?
Hey, Lauren.
Yeah, I had a pretty good week. We started recently a new project, and that was after 2 or 3 weeks on the beach or on the bench, depending on where you work and how it's called. So yeah, it's been really good to kind of be in that discovery phase. There's quite a lot of uncertainty, but that kind of creates just space to ideate and have fun. So yeah, I've been really good. How about you two?
It's been quite a hectic couple of weeks for me. I started my new job and I've been trying to hit the ground running. So a lot of reading up to do and trying to get into the swing of things, especially after a 3 week break being on holiday. The other thing is I have a joyful new addition to my life, a fur baby. I have a little cat now called Elmo and he's my first ever pet. I'm also trying to be the best pet parent I can be, so I guess I'm joining Lavinia in having a pet on the show.
Lauren, join the dark side.
I know, I just want to steal a dog off the streets, but I don't want to contribute to that problem.
I didn't steal mine. He's completely legit.
Oh, I love that update. It's like the most wholesome and fluffiest update. So over in my corner, I recently just passed the Life in the UK test, which is needed to get indefinite leave to remain status, which eventually after a year leads to like a British passport, if I should be so lucky. And basically, it's a 24 question test on like random British history. And I do like history, but now I'm absolutely plagued with like random facts about the Tower of London and all this stuff, which I just can't seem to leave alone. So if ever anyone brings up anything history related, I'm just spewing facts. But they include such important, crucial facts to British life, like how many ski slopes are there in the UK? Do you guys know?
We've both done this test, by the way, and no, I don't remember.
Actually, wait, are they all in Scotland? It's like 3 or 4 or something like that, right?
You're pretty close. Yeah, it's 5. So now you know. So any listeners as well taking the test, I hope you get that question. And you now know that there are 5 ski slopes in the UK.
And are they all in Scotland?
A lot of them. And then like some in like Snowdonia and Wales.
Yeah. Which sounds so much more ski slopey than it is.
Yeah, exactly. I don't know if they count the indoor ones as well. But like as a Canadian, I really am just shaking my head.
Speaking of things that don't make us shake our heads, today we are going to be talking all about unmoderated user testing. So what exactly is unmoderated user testing? It's just like it sounds. Unmoderated means it's not monitored or guided, so there's no one else present during the user testing study except for the participant. This is a definition we took from usertesting.com, so thank you very much. The participant completes any tasks and answers questions at their own pace, on their own time, and at a time and location of their choosing. And one example of this could be if you, the user researcher, decides to come up with a list of tasks that the participant can do, all you need to do is just put this into some sort of online study and send it across to them.
Nice. Thank you so much for that intro into unmoderated user testing. I'm super curious, what's your experience so far with unmoderated user testing?
So I did try and present myself as a bit of an expert on this at the start by giving you the whole spiel on what unmoderated user testing is. I have set up a grand total of 1 unmoderated user test in UserZoom, and this was one of my projects last year where I was designing a homepage for this system I was working on, and I essentially ran a first click test in UserZoom to present this image or prototype of the homepage to a number of participants, and then got them to complete a number of tasks, which helped me evaluate where there were design flaws or things I needed to work on more in the homepage. I wouldn't say I have a great deal of experience with it, but overall, I still think it's a great tool to have in your research arsenal. Once you set up an unmoderated user test. You can just launch it. That's great if, you know, you are fairly pressed on time, because that means while waiting for the results to come in, you can run a number of things in parallel. What about both of you?
Yeah, so hopping on that same bandwagon, I have done an unmoderated user test probably once, probably because I'm a control freak and hate just like handing over control. But I use this fantastic tool called UserZoom. I was working with a telco client and we had a couple prototypes and some screens looking at kind of some of the new features. And what I really did like is that UserZoom had like a built-in recruitment tool. So a short survey with inclusion, exclusion criteria for when you like set up your test. You definitely have to kind of set the parameters of how many people you want to apply and what types of people. It was nice that that was really clearly baked into the process, because you are just kind of like setting it and forgetting it. So it's very important that you set up those structures. And then we had to write some really clear and detailed instructions for the users. And it was largely a think aloud exercise. So they had to complete a specific task and their screen was recorded, and bonus points if they kind of like spoke aloud and told us what they were doing in the video recording. I will say it went well, and especially like the recruitment process was great and pretty seamless, but it is a bit difficult if the user gets stuck because they have no one to turn to because it is unmoderated. You can learn a lot in how people then try to move on, but I will say like there is no one you can call for help. And yeah, overall, I found it a really interesting and exciting experience to challenge me to kind of hand over control and set up something that is self-sustaining and can stand on its own legs. What about you, Lavinia?
I think you're raising a really good point about their inability to ask for support or help compared to when it's like a one-to-one usability session. My experience is very similar to yours. I think we've done two on my last project, and that was the first time I even set up unmoderated user testing. To all of our defense, I have a feeling it's become a lot more popular since COVID started, because I think user testing, user research in general used to be quite, I was going to say user facing. That's not what I mean. Just like face to face.
In person.
In person. Yeah. A lot of it was in person. Whenever I did any user research before, it was just an interview with a person and workshops in person and things like that. So yeah, I think that's why we all started doing it recently. But I found it to be really, really useful. I find that it saved a lot of time. I think we sent it out to about 40 people and about 30 have completed it. We got a lot of insights. And yeah, I think, Lauren, you raise a really, really good point. I think some people did get stuck. And I think we like left the whole session because of it, which, yeah, was interesting. But also, I think if it raises such a big response from the user where they just kind of like leave the session altogether, it raises a big problem with the flow and whatever you're testing, big enough to make you think about making changes and things like that. So it wasn't great for the user, I have to admit. I think only one or two have done that, but it did raise a big problem that we needed to change. So that was good. And yeah, I think it also helps with digesting and analyzing the data, because when you do user tests one-to-one, then you kind of have to like spend days culling through the data, analyzing it and so on. Whilst we didn't use user Zoom, we used Maze, and that was just like super quick. This many people went through it. This many people got stuck. This many people used a different way to go around it. They said this, they said that, etc. So much easier to analyze. So that's probably my biggest pro for them.
Amazing.
Tangential, but I just wanted to ask, with Maze, does that mean that they help you to track all that data already, or almost like help you pre-analyze your data? Because that sounds really interesting. You said you got insights into how many people were able to successfully complete this task. With that type of numerical data, is that what Maze gathers for you?
Yeah, they do. So they don't only say how many people went through it and how many people completed it. They also say, like, you can set a expected path where people go here and then they go here next and so on. And it actually tells you 80% of people didn't go on your expected path and show you where they actually went and how they reached the same point, which can be really useful as well. The data they create for you is really great. I do recommend Maze.
I know we've chatted a bit about this already, but what are some of the primary benefits of unmoderated user testing that you've experienced?
I think, first of all, it's quite quick and easy. If you have a lot of prep and you do a lot of thinking as a team about what the goals of your study are, unmoderated user testing is normally quite easy to set up because a lot of these user testing tools are fairly intuitive. And depending on how many people you recruit as well, once you send it out, the next day you can pretty much have dozens or even hundreds of responses. So I think once you're quite familiar with the process, it's fairly easy and streamlined to set up an unmod user test. The second thing is, compared to unmoderated user research, where you don't have to pay for the time of a dedicated, really skilled moderator, some tools are free or inexpensive in unmoderated user research. So when you're trying to put together a user research plan, sometimes it's just a lot easier to get stakeholder buy-in. So yeah, I guess it being like quick and easy, getting lots of responses and being not that expensive compared to mod user testing are some of the key ones that come to mind.
For sure. I think what I would add to that is just the volume of data. When we sent the 40 and got back 30 results, conducting 30 user tests would have taken us a minimum of 30 hours. And then you add obviously the analysis on top, that would have been a lot of time. So you just get access to so much more data so much quicker. But my absolute favorite part of unmoderated user testing is just not having to play calendar Tetris. When it comes to recruiting, that is probably my least favorite part, having to go back and forth, understand what people's calendars look like. I think when it's with maybe internal people, it's quite easy because you see their calendar, but often it isn't. It's with users and you don't have access to that information quickly. So it just takes so much time to find the right spot and things like that. So that's my number one, the fact that, yeah, you don't have to worry about that.
Yeah, no, definitely. I think not having to schedule like back and forth with the users you want to speak to and just allowing users to complete these tasks in their own time, I think that's definitely a huge plus for unmoderated user testing. But that being said, I mean, whenever you try and put together a user research plan, you also need to consider some of the drawbacks. And in this case, what do you both think might be some of the disadvantages of doing unmoderated user testing?
Yeah, 100%. I think potentially just because of the person I am, it's very hard to just let Jesus take the wheel, as Carrie Underwood would say, and to just create your test, set it and forget it, and just like throw it over into the hands of like solely the platform that you're hosting it on and the users. You definitely have to have extra consideration for making sure your instructions are very clear and robust, because you aren't there to tweak it. If someone doesn't understand, they have to be like perfectly clear. Of course, the godfather of UX design, NNG, has weighed in here, and they've got a quote that says, "Unmoderated research requires even more meticulous planning than a moderated study, since you can't rely on human judgment to adapt the study's procedures on the fly." So like, I love a semi-structured interview because you're able to tailor it and make it bespoke to the person as you're running it. Whereas in unmoderated user testing, what you write is what you have. So just make sure that's very clear from the get-go.
I think that is a great point, because if your questions are a bit ambiguous, or as you said, users don't have anyone to ask any clarifications to. So yeah, I think that's a great point. But I think from my end, what's great about moderated user testing is the ability to ask follow-up questions. So if you see someone get a bit stuck or take an interesting route, journey, then you can ask things like, oh, what attracted you about this way, or figure out why they're a bit stuck and things like that, because you see exactly how participants interact and behave when seeing your prototype. But when it's unmoderated, you obviously don't see that until maybe after, if they gave you access to video and things like that. So yeah, that's probably the biggest loss you have when it's unmoderated. You can't ask follow-up questions. But also, I think what we also found with maybe one or two users as well is they tend to just hit next, almost like you're installing a software on your computer just to maybe get that reward, or just because they don't have the time or anything like that. which obviously kind of dilutes your data a little bit. So you can clean it up afterwards and account for those scenarios, but that can make you lose a little bit of resources. What about you, Yusin?
Actually, on that last point, that's really interesting. Sometimes when you design these tests as well, you need to be cognizant of some of the biases or the types of behaviors that your participants might have. So some things I've read are just trying to limit the number of questions in the test as well to account for people's attention span, but also randomizing like the order of the questions or the order of the options, if that's applicable. So you generate more reliable data that's not as subject to bias based on participants' behavior. And I think just following on from that, actually, one of the things with unmoderated user testing is depending on the setup of your test, sometimes you might not be able to see how the participant is reacting in terms of facial expressions. You can't really see nonverbal cues other than what's written in the answers. Although there are some tools, I think, that allow you to get a video of the user as well as they are responding to the task you have set. That might be a possible limitation when you can't really see or get very much from the participants' responses other than what has been written down. And then I think, yeah, this is probably a similar point to what you both mentioned as well, but a lot of pre-work needs to be done in the run-up to make sure that the test makes sense and that there's a logical flow to the test. Some of the advice I've been given is try and do an internal test. It's very meta, so run an initial test within your team just to make sure it makes sense. One of the things that follows on from this as well is you often need to make sure that the stimulus or the prototypes you show are fairly complete or high fidelity, because you don't have a moderator to set the scene and explain if there are limitations within the prototype. So it's just being mindful of some of these limitations when you design your unmoderated user test.
And speaking of something that has no limitations, we've got this week's Hotline Design Hotline caller.
Hey, Hotline Design Hotline. I'm Nicole, a longtime listener and first-time caller. I've been looking to do some moderate user testing for our product as we have a very tight deadline to test our designs. What tips and tools do you recommend for someone who hasn't done this type of testing before? Thank you.
Thanks so much for calling in, Nicole. And what a great question. So in terms of tools, I have used UserZoom in the past, and I thought that was a really great tool. And we actually had a premium subscription of UserZoom, which allowed us to record videos of some of the users, like record their screens and record their audio. So it was great to kind of see where their mouse was going, if it's a click-through test. It was also great because we were able to have a think-aloud test. What I also really liked about it is that, especially like, I was given the guidelines to create the test and put it live, and over the weekend it would recruit, and then basically by like early the next week you would have your results, which is great because, you know, no one in my office actually works over the weekend. So it's great to come back in and it's like just over the course of 2 days over the weekend, all the information is there for you, waiting for you on Monday or Tuesday. So really loved that. And in terms of tips, I can't stress enough to prepare the questions with specific and smaller goals in mind ahead of time. It's even worth kind of running them through people in your teams just to make sure that, like, does the language make sense? Have you accounted for any ambiguities and then been able to adjust the language and the questions according to their feedback?
I think those are really great tips that I'll be taking on board as well when I do my next unmoderated user test. Personally, in terms of tools, I only really have experience with UserZoom, and I think it's fairly intuitive, but I think the tool doesn't matter so much as, you know, having, I think, like, you both have alluded to on this podcast already, just making sure that you have really clear goals for what you want to uncover and having like a clear timeline of things you want to do and making sure that you start recruitment at the right point so that you can, you know, wait for people to come in or like make sure that you give enough time for the responses to roll in, as Lauren is saying. I think one of the tips I have would just be to recruit a diverse pool of users that are likely to want or need to use your product. So just making sure that whoever you recruit for your unmoderated user testing is reflective of your actual target audience. As an example, if you are going to be building an HR tool, maybe asking people from the marketing department in your company to test it won't yield as valuable insights as if you were to get actual people within HR from diverse industries to test your product.
On my end, in terms of tools, I've only used Maze and I really loved it and really recommend it. The Maze team is very involved in the design industry and they use a researching world. So not only do they have a pretty great tool, but they have a lot of resources to learn and to make sure that you use the tools in the best way possible. So I personally really recommend them, but I am biased because it's the only one I used. And in terms of tips, I know I whinged a little bit about how hard recruiting can be if you don't have access to people's calendars, but I also find the analysis part quite difficult afterwards. It is super, super interesting, but it can be quite overwhelming, especially if you have quite a lot of data and making sure you find the right patterns, not only patterns, but the right kind of insights into it and stuff like that can be quite difficult. So I would say to make my life easier, I often try my best to clean up the data before I analyze it. As I mentioned, some users will hit next, next, next. So making sure that you kind of take that data out so it doesn't skew your insights can be quite important. So that's my main tip in addition to your great ones. Make sure you kind of clean up the data before you analyze it.
I think that point on analysis just made me think about something, especially if you are on quite a tight timeline. Could you involve other people on your team? Because I think like one of the issues with user testing or just doing any form of user research is you want to speak to people, but it also gives you so many great insights that sometimes it can get quite overwhelming. A while ago, I know, Lauren, you mentioned the rainbow spreadsheet, and that can be quite a nice way of generating insights collaboratively as a team. And like what I mean by that is maybe if you speak to 5 users or do unmoderated user testing with 5 people, could you as the, you know, designer take the analysis of 3 of the users, say as you go through their responses or like watch a video of how they attempt to complete these tasks, you can start noting things down in post-its and cluster them into themes. And then if you set up like a spreadsheet or a way of collating all these insights for your whole team, you can start entering the themes on the left-hand side of the spreadsheet, for example. As you go through the participants, like mark out the number of times you notice something, and then get your product manager or other people on your team to tackle some of the other participants as well, and then regroup together and like discuss what this looks like, so that at least when you're on a very tight timeline, you're trying to like delegate some of the things that other people in your team could also help with and not trying to take on too much.
Yeah, completely. I completely agree. And if you do have the opportunity to involve other people in that analysis, I think it's really good, because when the insights are just presented to you, I think they can be forgotten quite easily. You do a presentation to the whole team, this is what we found and so on. But I think if they're involved not only in the user testing, but also in the analysis, them finding out a few little nuggets might actually help a lot in making them feel part of it and kind of advocate for users later on in the process as well. So yeah, I think that's a great idea. The only challenge I think in my mind is it can add the additional layer of managing how those insights are taken out. Because if you're on your own and you like to use Miro to put post-it notes around, that is brilliant. You can just do that. But when you involve a few people in the process, maybe some people aren't familiar with Miro, don't like Miro, and then you introduce maybe spreadsheets and things like that. Mm-hmm. It's just the added challenge of managing how different people work. I don't think it's a big challenge. It's just something to keep in mind if you do bring people into that journey.
Yeah, I agree. Like, I think it just depends on timelines, how many resources are available. I know that when there are really tight timelines and like a lot of work to be done, it's always great to include people, but it's also great to have ownership over it end to end. So yeah, I think it just depends on the situation. But like you were saying, Lavinia, I think it's so great for evangelizing research to involve even some of the senior stakeholders in research. I really fundamentally believe that it takes like a few of those big impactful kind of quotes or findings for someone's perception to really change and for their like eyes to be open to some difficulties that the users are going through. So you never know what's going to be that switch for people that will show them, yeah, research is like fundamental and like the answers are there. We just need to engage with the users. You know, research for all is really what I'm saying.
For sure. I think our friend of ours was reading a book that's called It's Our Research. I haven't read it, but it makes me think of what you say. It's all of our research. It's for all of us.
100%. Awesome. And Nicole, thank you so much for calling into Hotline Design Hotline. If you would like to call into Hotline Design Hotline, you can ask us a question at anchor.fm/hotlinedesignpod. You can find us on Instagram at hotlinedesignpod and Gmail, hotlinedesignpod@gmail.com. Thanks so much for listening, and we'll catch you next time.
We're sorry. You have reached a number that has been disconnected. Please check the number and try your call again.